Hey, everybody loves to go out to eat, but did they ever stop and wonder, how'd that food get there? How'd that restaurant arrive? And what are they doing behind the kitchen doors? That's what we're going to look in today as we talk about a whole bunch of stuff here. A new interesting restaurant that's coming in. They're going to talk about edible flowers and other crazy things here. Is that true, Chef? Is that who we're talking about? With Chef Pascal, of course.
Yes, we are going to learn a lot about one of my favorite chefs that we worked together for several years. And actually, that was at the Café Jardin at Sherman Library and Garden. But what I want to learn and to share with the audience is the journey, because I know a little bit when it starts, but now there's a new era coming up.
A new chapter in her life and in her culinary journey here.
So this is Jessica Hoy, and thank you for coming.
And I have to sift through your French restaurant. How do you say your last name?
Roy.
Roy. You made it sound so exotic. Royer.
Roy.
Yeah. It sounded pretty nice, didn't it?
It did. I didn't just sound like Roy. Jessica Roy.
That's everything. He makes everything kind of sound nice,
it
if you ask
does.
Me.
So we're going to start to learn more how you came to the food business and all your passion. So I think, and you tell me if I'm wrong, you have several passions. You have a passion for gardening?
Yes, big passion.
Yes. You have a passion for cooking?
Big passion for cooking.
You have a passion for eating well?
Oh, big passion. I think about food 24/7.
There you go. And so all this goes into your concept of cuisine. And at Café Jardin, your cuisine was, you called it garden to table.
Farm to table, garden to
right?
table.
Yeah.
Okay.
And because they even start to grow some, not all, some that was, there were the herbs on every single plate. And the, also, you're an artist. You like to decorate plates. Look at that.
We're going to get into this in depth. Yeah. This is spectacular what you brought here. And so I'm confused. Did you work? Café Jardin was your restaurant, Chef?
Yes.
And she worked with you? Or
that? Yes. Yes.
And then eventually she did what? She opened another restaurant?
No, when I left,
okay,
she took over.
Oh, she took over. Okay. And she kept the place alive. Here.
Yeah, I became, we were chef together. She became chef on her own. And, so she had her own, she designed her own menu and became still maintained and became even more popular than you was a lot about work.
So let's spend just a moment and explain to people what Sherman Gardens is, because I'm embarrassed to say I've lived here in Orange County for a long time. I've driven by it over at, Newport Beach over there. I don't think I've ever been to Sherman
Gardens. Corona del Mar, yes.
Corona del Mar. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever been in there. So talk a little bit about this. Is it just like Huntington Gardens up in Pasadena, you said, a place where people go and walk and they do weddings, and then there are some shops and restaurants within the grounds there, or is it something else? I'm not really sure what it is. You don't buy plants and stuff there at the garden?
No, there's a little kiosk where you can buy a few plants, seasonal.
Why did you open a restaurant there? Because it's off the street, not on the street. Yeah.
The original restaurant was not really a restaurant. It was a little cafe that was open only one day a week on Thursday lunch.
Thursday lunch?
Yes.
Why would you open a restaurant that only opened on Thursday for lunch?
And run by volunteers.
By volunteers, okay.
And so they were making soups, sandwiches, very simple.
For people, what?
Because this
is
not a restaurant.
Is it a nonprofit? Tell me just quickly the story.
Yeah, Sherman Library and Garden is a nonprofit restaurant.
Owned by the same Sherman family that does the Sherman Ranch up in Hollywood and Sherman thing.
Yeah, but also all the people that come to the garden are members, and they can friend or members that can be invited.
I see. So that's why it's not. Is it open to the public? Can I just walk in there if I want to go there?
I don't know.
I have to look it up online where you're talking.
I'm not sure. You have to pay a fee.
So why did you, this famous French, with your already a popular restaurant on Bristol, near South Coast Plaza, high visibility location, go to a low visibility location behind the garden?
I was asked.
You were asked. Why not?
And I say, hey, there's a potential there. And also, the other potential is the catering side of it, all the weddings, especially on the wedding season. It was getting busy. And, you know, and we managed after to do, with Jessica Elf, to do some special evenings. And it was connected with the garden.
So here's how I looked it up online from their website. It says Sherman Gardens and Library, located in PCH. Extensive botanical collections with examples of plant life from desert to tropical. The gardens are veritable outdoor museum of plants. Is that what it is?
Outdoor, but also there's a couple of, you call it, closed.
Conservatory?
Yeah.
Yeah. And just to note, most of the grounds, I think, are closed right now. So I don't want rushing over. Yeah. It is under construction, so just keep that in mind for a bit. But it was, I think, somewhere where it would be a lovely place to stroll around while you have lunch.
They still have the koi pond?
I don't know. Yeah, it was there, yes, course. When we were open. It was there when we were open.
Yeah. So very events, fun. They have, but you become a member and you can have access to the gardens and stroll around and visit it. And then there are weddings and events and other things here. Yeah. I take it. And this has been around for a long time, 60 years or something? Long time.
Maybe.
That sounds right.
Because it's a 60 Sherman Library and Gardens. I'm assuming it's that old. Maybe I'm wrong here. We should have Sherman Gardens on to give us a... It's one of those things everybody knows about, and I don't know why I've never been there.
For me, people should know it's a landmark.
It is a landmark.
It's historical.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There's not many, especially on the Newport Beach, Corona del Mar, there's not much landmark. And so, but the library is unbelievable, too. If you are curious about the past of Orange County, they have an underground library with thousands of references.
Underground library, okay. Yeah. It's like Huntington, Samuel Huntington, who did all these railroads back in the 20s or something up in Pasadena.
Yeah,
he built a garden and a library.
It's well organized, and you can see publication on pictures from the past of Orange County. It's unbelievable. A visit is mind-blowing.
So when you left, how long ago did you leave Café Jardin?
Me?
Yeah.
What, 6 years ago?
Yeah, that sounds something
and
like
Chef
that. Yeah.
Jessica took it over here.
She took over and made it more toward the garden to tables. Mm-hmm. And she made a lot of friends because it's not what we're going to have today. She made a fabulous biscuit.
Biscuit?
How many biscuits do you do a day?
Oh, my gosh. I think, a day? Definitely by far my biggest seller off the entire menu.
Was a biscuit?
Were my biscuits. My grandmother was Southern on my dad's side. And when I opened the restaurant, everybody was asking for a bread option. And I really didn't want to give people just anything. I said, I want to give people something special. And that's from my heart. And so naturally, I took my family inspired biscuits and turned them into something I thought that would be fabulous for our guests. And people still don't stop talking about them. Even being closed now for a bit as I'm opening my next restaurant, 608 Sunset in Sunset Beach, I'm getting emails constantly for people still wanting them. So it definitely goes to show you a bit of their staying power
biscuits
with people.
And what makes the biscuits stand out? Because a biscuit doesn't... I guess if you're into the South, biscuits are a big deal. I know that.
Well, the thing is, when you make them fresh every day, you cannot beat that.
Exactly.
And they're not sitting in a showcase because there's no showcase there.
That's probably the only biscuits I've ever had that have been sitting around for a while and they get hard.
They bake and they're out.
Yes. I was very particular about them. I watched over every batch that went out. And what makes them unique, just touching the tables and talking to everybody, it's really texture, very crispy, crunchy on the outside.
A deep or something?
Yeah. So I serve it with a whipped sea salt butter and then a citrus infused honey that was inspired by an orange tree my grandfather planted in our backyard 30 years ago. So it's really fun because my biscuits are actually a blend of inspiration from my dad's side, from my Southern grandmother, and then from my mom's side, my grandfather who planted our tree that's still in our home today. And twice a year I harvest the oranges and make the incredible marmalades.
Those trees live that long. They live that long?
Yes, and it just gets better. But being being the gardener that I am, I'm always fertilizing it, watering it. I truly love to cultivate as well, and that really inspires most of the things that I do.
You have a great garden at home, too.
I do. Yeah. I do about almost 1,000 feet of grow space.
What?
It's pretty big, but I've scaled it to a point that's manageable. And my mission and vision is to really just share my passion for just the beauty of this state, the amazing things that we can grow. I want to really give people as much of a taste and feeling of California, of where we are, really hopefully to shine through the food.
So we've had this debate before. And Chef has not given me a good answer. Maybe you can give me a better answer.
Why?
I don't know. What is California cuisine? We all think we know it. It's fresh. It's light ingredients, not heavy sauces. But it can be anything. It's an eclectic combination of Asian seafood, French cooking, and locally grown produce. What is California cuisine for you?
I feel like you just described the way that I cook. For me, I grew up in the state. I'm native. My family is from the Midwest originally. But for me, growing up in California meant growing up with an absolute ton of sunshine and time spent outside.
Yeah.
And I grew up spending summers in Ohio, and my family had a kitchen garden there. And that's where I really had my first taste of homegrown, amazing produce, still warm from the sun, still flavors that I can taste today.
I grew up in Michigan, so nearby, and I appreciate that. We're talking about things like rhubarb. And
let me try to give you another answer on California cuisine.
Yeah, because you said you were in Paris, and they're trying to do California cuisine recently, and you're like, what is it? It's a catch-all for anything.
Yeah, no, it's a concept, actually, that California cuisine is really what's good at this moment. So are you not going to try to do the same thing
farm
all year long?
Super fresh, whatever you can get
what's
now.
Local, what goes with your sun and winter, because we have longer warm season here than anywhere else. And so there's more citrus, there's more flour.
More than just what grows locally. That's what, if I go to the South, it's what grows locally. You grow eat okra or something that they grow in the South. There are dishes that are grown there.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it isn't here, but it's also the combination of what's come to be also called fusion, which is you've got Asian, classic French, and European, and Hispanic, and all this stuff together into one.
Yeah. All my favorite things we're talking about here. And I grew up cooking with my mom. She was a CEO in aerospace, and her therapy.
She was a CEO in aerospace.
Yes. Okay. So she did cooking. She cooked everything on her days off.
My next question.
Yes.
Was it a family thing of cooking?
Yes, definitely.
But she's a CEO. There couldn't have been many days to sit around and cook or whatever.
She had Sundays. She worked a lot on Saturdays. But Saturdays after I would go to work with her. So I grew up going to work with my mom on Saturdays. So just tremendous role model there.
Did she pack you lunch?
No, I fended for myself. No. Okay.
Can we say the name of the company?
I think I hit the vending machine.
No.
She was the president and CEO of McDonnell Douglas.
McDonnell Douglas, a little tiny company called McDonnell Douglas. Oh, my goodness.
So she was the first female to lead, I think it was a $100 million, $200 million all company management buyout. So she was the first female to ever do that.
Wow.
So that was definitely, my parents both have tremendous work ethics. So I think that was just ingrained in me as a child. And then going to Ohio in the summers and being, I want to say, forced to garden. I can't say that I absolutely enjoyed the hot, humid weather, but what was unforgettable and just really still inspires me today was just being able to pick stuff and then have it on the dinner table that night.
So what age, we don't have to say how many years ago, but you say, I love to cook, and you start cooking for your family.
So I was actually, I would say I've always cooked my whole life. I started off baking. That was always my passion. But I didn't want to become a chef, actually. It didn't hit me until I was actually at a team dinner. I played volleyball. I played competitive sports for 15 years, which I feel like...
Beach volleyball.
Beach and indoor. Okay. And so it was at a team dinner.
It's a California thing.
That's right.
Did beach volleyball even start? I think it started out here.
Oh, it's huge.
Yeah,
it's...
But she used to live on Teton Beach. No?
I do, yes. I'm Huntington Beach, born and raised, Surf City. And so I'm so happy to be right next door in Sunset
Beach. Was your mother... Okay, that's a pretty high-powered executive for a pretty high-powered Defense Aerospace was a dominant player in the market for many years until it got bought. I think they moved it finally somewhere here. But which you say, Mom, I want to be a chef. She's like, no, you got to be a CEO. You got to be a sales executive. You got to be something.
I have the blessing of having both parents be incredibly supportive of my dreams and passions. And I've always been a really big self-starter, so nobody's ever had to push me into anything. I just always knew this was what I wanted to do. And at a team dinner, one of the moms brought out a platter of chocolate-covered strawberries on this beautiful platter. And I just remember thinking, I want to do that. And the next team dinner was at my house, and I just never, ever stopped from there. I already loved...
So this is where it starts.
Yes.
Planting the seed.
Yes.
And then you say, oh, we can get together, have a reunion, and the food will be right in the center.
So how did you find your way into Chef Pascal's circle here?
Yeah.
When you get there.
And so... Let's start first. What was your first?
First kitchen jobs. My first kitchen job, I was a kitchen assistant at Sur La Table in Newport Beach.
There you go.
Yes. And I loved, I remember my first class.
Before you walk in?
Before. Yes, this was when I was still in college. I was graduating college from Vanguard, and I needed a job, and I was very into cooking at that time, very serious about it, and I was in Sur La Table and basically begged the chef in the back to let me be a dishwasher, and she hired me as a dishwasher, and then...
That is the way Pascal started. That's the way so many of these people, dishwasher.
If you watch the show on TV, The Bear, it's like that too.
The one on Apple TV.
And then set your goal.
Exactly.
And because the reason I say that too, because, and then, how did you get the job in a 3-star Michelin in Chicago?
Oh, thank you,
what?
Chef.
That's a big jump. Okay.
So after when I was at Sur La Table, my chef there went to a job fair and met with an executive chef at Fairmont sitting across from her. And I got into the kitchen at Fairmont because she recommended me. So I spent over my first 4 years in the kitchen with Fairmont Hotels. And it was the most incredible almost four and a half years of my life. And I worked my way up and around that kitchen. I worked every station. I worked on the pool deck. I would beg to let me be in pastry for hours. So I really considered that my training ground. And as I was becoming chef de partie, I just felt like I was plateauing a little bit. I kind of felt like, not that I didn't have anything more to learn there, but I really wanted to see if I could rock and roll at a higher level. So
even though you did Food Network cooking show competition?
Yeah, so that came... So when I was at Fairmont, I entered into my first cooking competition. That was the first one I did on TV with Emeril. And I think that was 2014. And I designed an original pizza for California Pizza Kitchen and won $25,000. And so after I won the cooking show, I applied to every 3 Michelin star restaurant in the country.
Now we get there.
And Chicago emailed me back right away saying, hey, we'd love to talk to you. So I went on a, quote, vacation about 6 weeks
Can
later.
Can you say the name of the restaurant?
Alinea. Yes, Alinea in
Very
Chicago. And it was such a big goal for me to put myself somewhere where I just wanted to learn. And as much as I wanted to learn then is very much my passion today is learning. So it was a tremendous experience.
So you didn't lose your passion because when you go in very demanding, and you got to be pushed all the time, being a top food. And,
yeah, 70 hours a week.
I know, on a large crew.
70 hours?
Yes.
A large brigade.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes, chef.
Oh, in the army.
It was, and Alinea, I feel like, was definitely had a reputation for being pretty hardcore. I grew up playing sports, so for me, I just fit in really well with, I went there, and they were just really welcoming, and it was the hardest
so
2 years
like
of my
volleyball
life.
Say, chef, I got it.
Exactly. I always say sports prepared me for everything I ever went through in the kitchen. It taught me dedication, teamwork, hard work, working for something. And also, I hit adversity in volleyball. I tore my knee in ACL. So it also taught me one of the most important lessons is being able to pick yourself back up and keep trying.
I was going to say, because you can make a pro career out of volleyball here. I mean, there's big circuits and everything for that. But you said you got injured and that pushed you out of the sport.
I got injured. It was never my passion. passion. I really found that I wanted so badly when I would go to restaurants with my family, I didn't really have much of an interest to be at the table. I was dying to be like, let me inside that
be
kitchen.
Behind the kitchen door.
Yes, yeah. I was, I would have done anything.
I read an article about Jessica when she was at the Fairmont in Bobbitt on the MacArthur.
Yes, MacArthur.
And so with the Renaissance.
It's now the Renaissance.
This was my first hotel experience there.
Oh, you worked there too?
Yeah.
Way back
it was called the Meridian Hotel. Mm-hmm. And when I read that, and I was looking for someone to back me up in Café Jardin, I asked Jessica to come to my place and cook dinner for my wife and I.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
And you did.
Yes.
And how long did it take me to say you got the job?
I feel like you played a little hard to get with me.
And the appetizers before
I said it was the same night.
I think it was. And honestly, I'm just so grateful for our time together. Yeah. And thank you for believing in my talents. But it was important to me. And I thought it was really cool to be able to have an opportunity to work with you.
Oh, I'm glad you did.
Yeah.
You know?
So
that's something we're going to remember for the rest of our life. And this is a big part of your journey.
Yes, Chef.
And so now, talking about your journey.
Before you get to your new place, what did you do when he left Café Jardin? How did
so Café Jardin changed to 8 Dahlia.
Dahlia.
Ah,
which was my kitchen address.
Exactly.
Heart of my house. When I first opened, I had somebody up in Sacramento try to give me a little bit of a hard time about my first name I chose, which was originally Cultivar, but that's just a name
cultivar,
thing.
People say, what's cultivar?
Yeah, everything happened so quickly. So grateful for the experience. It's just, I've learned so much. I'm so grateful.
Name your restaurant with the address, even though it's a kitchen door, it fits perfect with the show behind the kitchen door.
Yeah.
And you create a great restaurant behind the kitchen door.
That's right.
Talking about kitchen door, do you remember the time, because you were right at that time, we got hit by COVID, and we could not serve in the dining room. But we managed, and with your help, you and I actually prep meals to go through the back door.
That's right.
And people used to come and pick up food right there. Some people were ordering. So there was a very special time as well.
It was. Chef would come in with his big notebook and he'd be like, I got all these orders. And that was so cool. It was such a time to think creatively. And I just take that experience and apply it now in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, talking about rebounding, think defeat you. You got to make it.
Yes.
Find a way.
Yes.
There's always a way to make it happen.
Yes.
And do you agree with Chef? He says that has forever, at least for a while, changed restaurants in that you can't just wait for people to walk in the door anymore. You've got to reach out. You got to do catering. You got to do
totally.
Uber Eats. You got to do events. You got to do classes. You got to do something other than throw the door open in the morning and say, okay, we're ready.
And also making friends of your audience and when you're diners. They know you and they want to see you.
Yes.
And the good thing in this kitchen over there, I hope you have that in the new one coming up. It was an open window, and people could see from the dining room, actually the patio dining room, because it was mostly outdoor. They can see the whole kitchen, and then we used to wave sometimes at the guests. It was very special.
That was, to me, the biggest change I've seen in restaurant in my lifetime. When I came to California in the early 80s, that started to be California cuisine, Alice Waters, you're down here. Other people started experimenting with this different style of lighter cuisine, particularly lighter French cuisine. But they opened up the kitchen. When I was a kid, nobody ever saw behind the kitchen door. You never saw into the kitchen.
You know really the pioneer of that?
I don't.
Los Michel Richard.
Michel Richard, your friend, up in Hollywood.
He opened a restaurant, and there was a window, but you feel like there was no window.
Yeah.
And you could see all the activity. Yeah. Like a stage right there.
It was a stage, and that's when chefs became performers, and they became, otherwise they were just hidden figures. You might know their name, but you never saw them, and they rarely came out.
And to talk about California cuisine, his restaurant was called Citrus.
Yes, Citrus Grill.
Citrus first.
Citrus first, yeah. I met there many times.
And the food for me He was a pioneer of one of the pioneers of California cuisine with Alice Waters, too.
That was one everybody usually says up in Berkeley.
Yeah, amazing. And but he was also, he was first a pastry chef and then became, you know.
I don't know his journey at all. Is he still with us?
He passed away a few years ago.
But you were big buddies, weren't you? You were friends of his?
Very good friends. We did a lot of things together.
He was very, when I was up in Hollywood, that's when I came to Hollywood in the 80s, Michel Richard was one of those handful of Spagos, Citrus. Mm-hmm. There were a bunch of
Spago
these.
Spago is Wolfgang Puck, yeah. We made the pizza more Californian, actually. But I have a picture of Michel Richard, Julia Child on ice smoking cigars.
Smoking cigars.
That's so cool.
Naturally. Oh, we got to put that up somewhere here. Yeah. Hold
that's
on
so
now.
Cool.
Anyway, going back, now you have a 608 Dahlia. Sunset.
Sunset. Yes.
And one thing that didn't change. Is that true? Google is still on the Coast Highway.
Yes.
So you went up the Coast Highway from Corona del Mar to Sunset Beach.
I just went north and I scoured the county for the perfect location. And I was prepared not to take a restaurant.
If we take Coast Highway.
Enjoy the, we put can, the windows down.
One point.
Let it, down. Your hair.
Yeah, I know.
Blow. Yes.
Try to have your ocean
she does
smell.
Look like a California girl here. Mm-hmm. Let your hair blow.
Yes.
Out the Coast Highway.
And so at one point in Sunset Beach, they will get to your restaurant. And what's the address?
So it's 16821 PCH, Sunset Beach, 90270.
Why keep the
like
number
that?
608 then, which was originally your house and then the place you owned?
She made a name from that.
Wait, the name.
I really was able to build a very loyal following in Corona del Mar. So I wanted, and it was, Dahlia was like my first child, so it was special for me to honor what I built and keep it alive a little.
It's not easy because when I left, I say, hey, Jessica.
Good luck.
You're on your own. Good luck.
It's all yours.
When does this open and how big and what are we going to see there? Give us a preview of when we're going to see all this.
So we're going to be opening in fall of this year. I'm so excited. We've got about 120 seats.
Okay.
We're going to have a fabulous bar with the cocktails that I'm working on right now.
You had me at bar right there because that is such a big part of. Go back to your place. You never said the bar. The bar was part of your business, but it wasn't the reason
I
people came
really
in.
The only place I had a bar was at the brasserie in Fashion Island. But in my original fine dining restaurant, I just served cocktail on demand. There was no bar setting.
And I think that's a big part of today, what brings people in. For me, my wife and I have a tendency to sit at the bar.
The liquor consumption goes down.
Has gone down, no
it's
question.
It's gone down, but still people, let's have one cocktail.
But the price has gone up. You're not paying, I'll pay $20 for a cocktail now, or $15, $20, because I'm only going to have one or two. So as I drink less, I'm willing to spend more and drink better.
But I will say the cocktail, the mixology went up a notch. So
clearly.
Because more creativity.
Immensely. And that's what I'm paying for. Yeah. If I'm going to pay $15, $20, I want to see them make it. I want to taste something I've never done. I want to have edible flowers or all sorts of other crazy things that they're throwing in there.
They do a big deal these days, mocktail.
Our non-alcoholic program was already very good at Dahlia. It's going to be even better in Sunset Beach, and also be doing heavy tea service as well because we'll be open for lunch. So I'm really working on and started to source amazing teas.
So talk to me about
Newport.
Teas. I get the mocktail because I'm not much of a drinker anymore either, my age. But I still want to have the taste and the flavor. I love the creativity of a cocktail. I don't get teas. Maybe because I never grew up really liking tea or tasting tea. But that's an Asian tradition. Some in tea houses now.
We used to do tea at the garden.
Yeah. And afternoon tea. Yeah.
Three course tea. And each course has a different tea. That's when you have tea pairing.
Pairing. You had the friends from Knife and Pleat, don't they do a tea service, I think, up there or something? Where did tea come from? I never went to teas. I never hung out with teas. This is
because you need some older girlfriends.
That must be it. But
I find that people, it's what I found, people were really...
Sorry for that.
It was...
Sorry, that's going to take a moment to recover. Okay. All right. So I needed an older girlfriend. Sorry to tell my wife I needed an older. She is older than I am.
You know, I have to go back a little bit. Mother come with their daughters to the tea, too, because they learn almost the etiquette of the tea.
Absolutely. And it's I think etiquette deal. Was not part of my growing up in the 60s. We were anti-etiquette. We were hippies. We threw away the raising your pinky and having little teacups and all that stuff here. That was not my generation.
I still do that.
You still do. Of course you do. But if you went to my mother's generation or the World War II generation older, that was always part of refined dining.
Tea, and that's the old experience. Actually, tea time service is really the original of a multi-course dinner in a fine dining restaurant.
Of what? Is that?
The original start of a multi-course dinner in a restaurant with wine pairing. And wine is tea.
Tea. I never thought of matching tea. And I know people are into oolong teas and strange teas.
So yeah, because you have a savory, you have different potatoes, and then you have the sweets. And so it's really different.
Tea to me is English. It's the old tea time. You have your little crumpets and things.
Nothing better than a cucumber sandwich.
Cucumber sandwich,
right. Cream cheese.
And that's what.
This is true.
And does that just give you another serving too? Because it's in between lunch and dinner?
We're going to be doing just tea in general on my menu will be a thing. But I am going to be doing a tea service as well, which is really fun. And that'll probably be a couple times a month to start.
Okay, because I'm, again, trying to find unique things that bring people in. Mm-hmm. Tea time coming back, it seems to be where people come in at a different time. Most people, lunch, and by 2:30, lunch is done, and then you're waiting for maybe early bird dinner at 5 and the bar at 5 or something, but there was a dead period in the afternoon. Tea can fill that.
Maybe
tea?
You can do that again. The group is called the Women of Chapman.
Oh,
every year, they have the tea party. Mm-hmm. Not the political one, but the tea party. And with a different theme, they come with their hats.
Oh, yeah, it's that whole world thing. Has come back, the big hats and the fancy dress. And the
tea, fashion, flowers. Mm-hmm. And that, for me, I love this kind of thing. I want to make sure this doesn't disappear.
So is she going to do any of that, or are you just putting this into her head here?
No, I'm definitely going to be doing tea service. Apart from that, I'm really excited to just get into the neighborhood, get into the space, and really figure out what people are wanting.
That's the key.
That's the key. So we're definitely opening for lunch and brunch. Brunch on the weekend's going to be, I'm so excited about it. So we're starting with that, and then we're going to...
Sunday brunch?
Saturday and Sunday brunch.
No dinner, though? Usually
dinner. We're going to build into dinner.
Into dinner, okay.
Yeah, we're going to settle in. We're going to open with, give people a taste of everything they loved about Corona Del Mar, where we were. Very heavy on salads, biscuits, beautiful desserts, wonderful cocktails, both non-alcoholic.
I can tell the audience, check out my Facebook page. I did post some of your pictures of the salad, of your chocolate, of your biscuit.
Thank fabulous. You. Yes, and we're going to start with all of those amazing things and then build an unbelievable happy hour. I really want Sunset Beach to be a social and culinary refuge, just somewhere where people don't want to walk to, drive to, but run to after their work week.
Are you close to the ocean?
Yes, you could throw a rock at the ocean. Oh, we're right off PCH and Broadway, so we're walkable, drivable, pass by, walk by.
And Sunset is like that. It's another community.
It's so cool.
It has that old communal beach feel to it where people do walk and hang out.
And they are a lively bunch, let me tell you. They are lively and alive in Sunset Beach. Some people might say, oh, Sunset Beach, a little bit of a sleeper. Let me tell you, I was out in the neighborhood on Saturday night at Neptune's, and that place is bumping. So it's we hopping. Are pumped.
Neptune been there.
Yes, and they're busy.
And do you have any outdoor seating?
I have a little cute little patio that I'm so excited about. It's only about 10 to 14 seats. I'm wiggling with it right now, but it's going to be amazing.
I think you should have one seat. You should keep it always available, and it's Pascal's seat. And it just has a little sign there. And say, can I take that? No, that's Pascal's seat.
Absolutely.
I'm good with that.
Don't forget where you came from, right?
So. All right, we're going to have to cut a little short today because we're starting a new show with your friend Kelly Bennett today at 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's starting at 2, so she's going to be downstairs shortly. So
let's get to
Let's get into eating.
It's only 1:45.
I'm not saying we're over. I'm just saying let's get to the eating.
So these are really fun, Chef. I had fun this morning. I can't help but want to bake something for you. So these are really fun little banana snacking cakes. They're going to be on our lunch menu.
They look so beautiful. I don't even know if I can eat. I want to eat one, and I will eat one, but that is art looking at. What am I looking at? Because you do have edible flowers on
Yes, we do. So we have a really lovely banana cake base, and I use this really amazing flour from the Tehachapi Grain Project.
Give us some name. These look like a BBO kit.
Yeah, so these are violas here. These are dianthus, so it's like a carnation. These little petals here.
You can eat the flower?
You can. You don't have to. They're really there to excite you as well. Flowers capture.
These are really good too.
Flowers to me capture a moment of beauty and time. So you just enjoy them while they're here because tomorrow they'll be gone.
Is that a carnation or something? You would eat the carnation?
You can, all of these, yes, all of these are technically edible.
This is a dahlia. Huh?
That's a dahlia, and then we've got some lavender here. So those are some of my favorite. I do. I grow all of these.
Oh,
and you'll
God.
See all this kinds of stuff.
It's like radishes or a good herb.
The garden, let me tell you, grows the most incredible bar garnish for cocktails.
Oh, I'll bet.
I mean,
I'll bet. Because now
they're
going back to the 20s and the 30s and all these crazy garnishes that they would put, or new ones that nobody's ever thought of before.
Yeah.
What about this little tiny?
So that one is actually purslane, which is a really fragrant herb. It smells really interesting, but I just love it when herbs flower. So I let a lot of herbs go to flower, and I find that plants are beautiful in all of their states.
And they make their own seed.
Then they'll reseed themselves.
Yeah. Let's pass one over here. Back off
let
the
me
camera
grab one before they're going to come back.
And these were made too with coconut sugar, and it's a light whipped topping. So it's like a high protein, just light little
snacking
cake.
And you said something about Tehachapi. I don't know anything about Tehachapi.
Yeah, so it's a really cool sustainable wheat. It's a farm here in California, and they're all about growing non-GMO organic sustainable
water. This is up our summer, water. Like the Tehachapi Pass or something up north of LA there.
Drought tolerant wheat. And so it's just fun, again, just being in California, celebrating where we are, using a beautiful drought tolerant product while we're at it.
Amazing.
Pretty fun. Okay. I get excited. And
how do
it
you
was
find
fun.
This? How do you source these things? We don't do enough on this show talking about sources. He's brought some of his buddies in. But I think that's
a
big part
you
of
you want to share.
That's probably that is probably
so
true.
Funny.
He just identified the reality of it here. Because that is the key to California cuisine, sourcing the right ingredient. Not just how to make them, and the creativity of how to put them together. It's finding the right ingredients, I think.
I think it starts with the desire to want to cook that way, to find those ingredients. And to me, it's also a desire to really build relationships one-on-one, face-to-face relationships with purveyors. To
he
me, this
about
is
the OC Baking Company that he was one of the first clients with and had a relationship for 20-some years.
It's a relationship business. That's what I always say. And I care deeply about the relationships I build, I cultivate, whether it's with the team, with people I source things from. I just think we're here on this earth and let's help each other out. And
wow, there's a California attitude. Like I love it. Okay, let me try one here.
Yes,
I'm off camera if you're looking at me here. Which one should, are they all the same?
They are all the
all
same.
All the same.
Okay, wow.
And they look rich.
They look very rich.
When you eat.
I was afraid that it looks a little too rich here.
I really designed them. They look more than what they are. It's a lightly whipped topping. There's no butter in the topping, which has a lower fat content that way. And then I folded in some Greek yogurt to kind of bump the protein up.
I got to stop you right here. Wow.
Wow.
That sugary topping.
So that is candied maple pecans. So I did a little toasted walnuts with maple sugar. I love maple sugar. And then I sprinkled in a little pumpkin pie spice
This is spectacular. Why is it so light and fluffy on the top here?
Oh, you're so nice. Well, I wanted it to feel light because these are going to be on our lunch menu.
Because it looked heavy to me. I thought, this is going to be really big and sugary and filling. And
here's the thing. I really want to bring desserts back.
Wow.
I want to bring desserts back.
Say that again, Bob. I'm a big dessert fan.
Me too.
And everybody's taking them off their menu.
And they're like, oh, I don't have room for dessert. And I just really want people to come to Sunset Beach with just room. You're going to hopefully save room for dessert. Because dessert, to me, it's supposed to be pleasurable. It's supposed to bring you joy. And I'm not eating desserts usually to balance out calories.
Dessert will come back. One chef like you bring something new.
Amen. And good and fresh and light.
People say, oh, I want to try it. That's, mm-hmm. that's really special.
Yeah. Most people I know, my daughter, my son-in-law, and my wife, none of them will have dessert. I'm the only one running my family. My grandmother was a big dessert maker. Not my mother, but her sister, my aunt, who used to live out here. We would look at the desserts first. Mm. We would say, because it wasn't dining out until we had dessert. Mm. Dessert was something that was so beyond what I could do. I could maybe make, or somebody could make this at home, say comfort food, meatloaf or whatever. It's nice. We'll have it. I like it. Chicken. But if you went out, to me, that was the icing on the cake. That was the topping. That was the proof.
I think that's trouble is too many times for too many years, they want to be on a diet.
Absolutely.
Oh, I had enough for dinner.
They thought it was fattening. And
I don't want any sugar.
Right. And I'm just telling people, don't bring your diet to Sunset Beach. Put it on pause for the night. So you'll have to come try my pavlova. I'm going to have also a pavlova.
Oh, wow. What is that? That's obviously a Russian.
I'll go have a walk and to the beach and come back, pick up your car.
What is pavlova? Exactly. I don't know what that is. It sounds
so
Russian.
It was named after a Russian ballerina. Mm-hmm. And it's a crispy meringue on the outside and almost has a marshmallowy texture on the inside. And we're going to have a beautiful seasonal fruit sauce, marinated berries on top of that. And it's going to be topped with a beautiful whipped cream. And I just love pastries for that reason. They're very textural. They're flavorful. And honestly, they're just meant to make you happy.
And I don't see... Even the big hotels don't often employ pastry chefs anymore. They sub that out. If they have desserts, it's a very limited dessert menu, and it's stuff they buy from someplace else rather than make it in-house.
It's a question of labor costs.
Labor costs, exactly. And return. How many people are buying it? Are they getting for it? But it used to be, for a restaurant, that was an extra added profit. You've had this, and you had a great cocktail and wine.
All the breakfast pastries is frozen.
Yeah.
Or in buyout.
Exactly. Yeah. So they make it in mass and then they have it shipped in and it might taste okay, but it's not this. This is incredible. Oh my goodness.
And I try to focus on recipes that are not overly complicated. That way I can really just focus on the quality of ingredients, the execution and presentation, and also be able to offer them to people at a reasonable cost. So I just want to make as much of my food accessible to everyone as possible. So that's what I'm going to be working on in Sunset Beach. So I hope people will come see us.
All right. When and where? This fall? Give us
this
the address
fall,
again.
16821 PCH, Sunset Beach, California. We are right off PCH and Broadway across from Captain Jack's.
And you're going to have a website too.
We are. Yes, we do have a temporary website up and running and just getting construction finalized. And we're just doing some minor cosmetic things, and once that stuff gets buttoned up, we are honestly full speed on our way.
Chef Pascal knows good cooking. I know good desserts. This is great desserts.
Thank you. It was fun to be here.
Paul, I know you've been looking at this. I'm going to take a couple home from my
over my dead body. No, absolutely.
I'll let you guys fight over those.
Okay, all right. Thank you. Take us out, Chef Pascal.
Thank you, Chef Pascal.
Congratulations
on your new coming up venture, and they're going to make it well.
Oh,
thank you, Chef.
You have such a personality. Yourself, your cuisine is so.
I think she captures California. She grew up in it, she understands it, and I think she's capturing what
I can't wait
define.
To see you both there.
I love it.
All right.
Look forward to it. Thanks
Let's
for
get
coming.
Your clip.
Thank you.
Wow, I'm telling you. If you want desserts, bring back desserts. This is a place to try them, as well as all the other elements that make us smile here in California. As we look behind the kitchen doors at another great place coming up, right here with Chef Pascal on Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studios here at the University of California, Irvine's Beyond Applied Innovation.